Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. New details are emerging in the Boston Marathon bombing case as attorneys for convicted bomber Jahar Tsarnaev prepare to file their appeal of his death sentence by December 19th. Hundreds of newly unsealed court documents are providing information and insights about a number of aspects of the case. And joining us now for more on the story is Boston Herald reporter Laurel Sweet. Laurel, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
So perhaps the most startling information we've learned from these new documents refers to a triple homicide in Waltham in 2011. So this is 2 years before the bombing. And according to the filings, Jahar told a college classmate in 2012 that his older brother, Tamerlan, his bombing co-conspirator, had, quote, committed jihad in Waltham. And that college classmate was willing to testify during Jahar's trial, but prosecutors were able to bar any discussion of that triple murder. So first of all, Laurel, can you explain why the defense team would fight to include more details of this brutal killing? Why bring up more bad stuff that the Tsarnaevs maybe did?
I know. It's funny because I can remember the hearing that they held on them wanting to include this in the trial. And as we know now, federal judge George O'Toole refused to allow it to be admitted. But what they were going after and a huge point of their defense was that they wanted to show that Jahar was under the influence of his older brother, that his older brother Tamerlan was the one who was for all intents and purposes, already a psychotic killer, and that he was just, going along to get along, in effect. And that, they really wanted to hammer home to the jury the brutality of the murders of these three men and what were done to them, which was they were, nearly decapitated and they were bound. But Judge O'Toole would not allow that in, so the jury never heard any of that, and it really weakened their argument in terms of how big a player Jahar was in all of this.
Makes sense once you unpack it, right? And Tamerlan, of course, we should remember, was the older brother who was killed in the shootout in Watertown, and so his younger brother's defense team is effectively willing to throw him under the bus here to make him look like he was really the ringleader. And Laurel, the case remains unsolved. The triple homicide remains unsolved, according to the Middlesex District Attorney's Office. But at the time, it was widely considered to just be a drug-related murder. So do we have any idea why Jahar Tsarnaev would have called it a jihad?
Well, no, that didn't come out so much. One of the victims was a very close friend. In fact, some said the best friend of Tamerlan, Brendan Mess. And according to court documents, multiple court documents, the men were considered involved in the drug trade, and one of the bodies had marijuana sprinkled on it. But it looked more of like a drug rip than just a flat out robbery. So that was a very interesting choice of words, I thought. And it's incredible. It does remain unsolved, even though there is allegedly a written confession out there by another friend of Tamerlan's.
Right. This is Ibrahim Todashev you're talking about, who was being questioned by FBI and state police authorities in Florida. And he was killed during that interrogation about a month after Tsarnaev's arrest. What do we know about Todashev's role in those Waltham killings, Laurel?
Well, supposedly, and there are conflicting reports. Again, this is citing court documents, some that said that he initially came out and said he had nothing to do with it, and then once Tamerlan was dead, he was very quick to implicate him in all of this. Among the unsealed, these court documents that were just unsealed last week, there is a note by the defense that they actually have a copy of the written confession he made before he was killed in his apartment in Florida. And that was found to be self-defense by an FBI agent. And also there were two Massachusetts state troopers on hand who obviously were investigating the Waltham triple homicide.
So we have a possible confession from Todashev. We have the willingness of Jahar's college classmate to testify. Is there any other evidence linking Tamerlan Tsarnaev to those Waltham murders?
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, because we have also now learned that Jahar was apparently willing, as early as October 2013, straight through the trial, he was willing to plead guilty if they took the death sentence off the table. But what the government noted, and we don't know, they sort of described the plea negotiations as torturous and not quite sure. I don't think they ever got beyond draft form, really, because really, what did he have to offer them? But they had hoped to question him about their concerns about there being possibly a larger cell at play here, perhaps bombs that had been hidden that they weren't aware of. And he was just unwilling to cooperate with them, so the whole thing fell apart. But if they had gone through with it, I would have to think that one of the things that he might have cooperated on was what they already knew was his brother's alleged involvement in these murders.
So since his defense team was unsuccessful the first time around in being able to enter information about these Waltham slayings, do we expect a different outcome this time during the appeal, Laurel? I mean, that would seem to be a key point that they would make if they were trying to get him reduced to a life sentence.
Boy, I would certainly think so. I mean, there's so many things that we expect them to hit upon. It's a little bit dicey because it never became evidence in the trial, and I'm not an attorney, let me state that right off the bat. But I think one of the points they might be able to appeal was the Judge O'Toole's ruling that this not be allowed into evidence.
And there's one other tidbit that you picked up, Laurel. You had an interesting piece about the conditions of Jahara's confinement maybe not being quite as austere as prosecutors have made them out to be. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I've had many people commenting to me today about how poor their cable system is, apparently, compared to what he has in a Supermax prison. But
50 channels of DirecTV, right?
According to the prosecution, yes. I have not been able to get the Bureau of Prisons to confirm that. They had the prosecution had very much, and this was all done behind closed doors, and I state again that we're just now learning this. They'd very much wanted to be able to tell jurors that if they sentenced him to life, that it wasn't going to be all that bad. The defense wanted them to think that he was being, you know, he'd be barred to a moonscape where he'd never be heard from again, and you know he'd be staring at three walls, and his only view of the outside world would be a window 2 inches wide that's pointed toward the sky. Prosecutors argued that wasn't the case, that he would have access to 50 channels of DirecTV, their words, which he would have complete control over. There'd be yoga instruction. He could listen to music. And the judge did not want any mention of television uttered during testimony. The prosecution did manage to get in the words prison programming and through a witness, and they were stopped there. And later, as I saw in a transcript from a closed-door meeting with him, he wasn't at all happy with that and was very concerned. And the defense wanted to make an issue of it, too, because he had told them, do not talk about television. But
so
the prosecution felt that, yeah, the jurors wouldn't quite grasp what exactly prison programming was.
Laura, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time. That's the Boston Herald's Laurel Sweet. There's more Radio Boston ahead. Stick with us.